Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Prop G Pod's Office Hours. This is the part of the show where we answer your questions about business, big tech, entrepreneurship, and whatever else is on your mind. If you'd like to submit a question, please email a voice recording to officehours@profgmedia.com. I have not heard or seen these questions. First question.
Hi, Scott. My name is Nate Chavitz. I live in Bend, Oregon. I am a pilot. I love airplanes. I also love how passionate you are about new ideas that are designed to change paradigms. So I'm going to ask you about Boom Supersonic. My overall question is, how does this business still exist? And I say that because I look at their marketing and they will tout Los Angeles to Sydney in 7.5 hours. And yeah, that would be great. I just don't actually think there's any way to do that. And I know that there's no way to do that with the Overture, because if you look at the range of the plane, it cannot fly from Los Angeles to Sydney. It can't even fly from Seattle to Tokyo. Also, the plane doesn't fly at all. It doesn't even have an engine. And to really put a point on all of this, I started thinking about the point of the Overture and the plane that they're building. And one of the things they keep talking about is how there hasn't been any meaningful innovation or something in aviation in the last 50 years, which is not true, but I will leave that to the side for now. But they're saying we need to build a plane with all this new technology. And what have they come up with? The Overture, from what I understand, flies only 300 miles further than Concorde, but it does it carrying fewer people more slowly. How does this company exist?
So thanks for the question. You put me a little bit on my heels because I'm an investor and I love this. And also, I want to acknowledge that I think you bring up valid points. The company has not announced an engine manufacturer. It hasn't solved the propulsion problem. Keep in mind, the expected launch date is 2029. They do have a prototype. They have done wind tunnel tests. They have very talented people working on this company. The CEO is a former Amazon operations person. They've hired a ton of people out of Gulfstream. The management team reads like a who's who of sophisticated aviation. So they've got a good team. They've raised a lot of capital, and they still have to figure out the propulsion or specifically the engine manufacturer. But my understanding, based on investor updates, is they have several opportunities or partners who are very interested, and they'll be making an announcement soon. I think your point about LA to Sydney is a good one. I don't know if the Overture has the range, but I think most of the desired routes they've talked about, and the most popular route I would imagine will be New York to London, they do have it. I'm not an engineer, but if you had supersonic technology 50 years, it means the avionics, the propulsion, and the materials would all be dramatically better now, and that supersonic travel should be A, better and cheaper now. I just think that logically, in terms of the cadence of technology, and the data I've seen on it is that they are continuing to hit milestones and they're looking to have a fully functioning prototype by 2025 or 2026 and have their first one in operation in 2029. I also just think the economic opportunity is enormous. You have people flying private. The number of people who have entered the private aviation market is up something like 10 or 15 fold in the last decade or two decades. It's just exploded, especially through COVID, as it's brought in a new group of people, sort of not the uber wealthy, and private aviation used to be the playground just to the uber wealthy, who will spend 50, 75, 100 grand to go one way in a private plane from New York to London. So I think you're going to see a huge market for people willing to pay 10, 15, 25 grand to get to London in 3.5 hours. And if the Concorde could do it with very, technology that was developed in the 60s, I can't imagine that Boom's not going to be able to do it. It sounds like you know what you're talking about. I will acknowledge that I don't think they have proof yet around the LA to Sydney route in terms of the legs you need for that. But I have seen the data around the plane itself, the avionics. But in addition, people much smarter than me, specifically big airlines, United and American Airlines, who have very sophisticated engineers and due diligence committees, have put down hard cash money orders with Boom. So I'm super excited about this. I think it's overdue. I find the innovation in aviation has been fairly uninspiring. I think it takes longer to get from New York to Dallas now commercially than it did 50 years ago. Most, I think, of the innovation has been around economics, and that is trying to save money to get people from point A to point B as economically as possible. I find flying to be a near inhuman experience, especially in coach, the way you have to sit for an extended period of time, that the staff is overworked and underpaid. I think there's enormous opportunities for innovation. And I think a lot of it comes down to speed. And that is, I'm in London right now. If I could get back to New York and call it 3.5 or 4 hours, I would probably go next week because I have a few meetings. I go for 2 or 3 days, but I'm not going now because of the jet lag and the 8 hours or 7 hours, whatever it is, it's just too much. So we will agree to disagree, but I think you're being a little bit pessimistic. You sound a little bit like me. I get the sense we'd get along. But I put a substantial amount of my own money in this, sort of a multi-million-dollar investment, which is a big investment for me, because I think it's time for supersonic travel again, and I'm excited about it. But I guess we'll see. But I will see you next to me as we go to Hawaii in 2 hours, and we get leis when we get there. They say, congratulations, we're putting a lei on you. You got here so fast. Wouldn't that be nice? By the way, new season of White Lotus. Got to watch that. Anyways, thanks for the question. Question number two.
Hey, Prof G. This is Mark calling from Mississauga, Ontario. My question is about Amazon. Currently, it's trading at a 52-week low. Looking at this company, I'm thinking, their dominance in the cloud market hasn't significantly changed, and the retail market as well. But love to get your thoughts here. Is this a unique buying opportunity for Amazon?
Mark from Mississauga, Ontario. Love the Canadians. Love the Canadians. We get a lot of inbound interest or a lot of questions from Canadians. They're friendly. They're smart. How do you get 100 drunk Canadian fraternity guys out of your pool? Hey, guys, would you please get out of the pool? I love that joke. I love that joke. Anyways, Amazon. Amazon is one of my 3 or 4 largest holdings. I have owned it since 2009, I think. I've sold a little bit to pay for a house in 2013. But it's been an unbelievable gift, even despite the fact that it's been, get this, cut in half. It's off 48% in the last 52 weeks. That hurts, especially if you bought a year or 2 years ago, with the S&P down 20%. Again, it's a growth company. They overhired. They're going through layoffs. I think they have more competition. Its 52-week high was 188. Its 52-week low was 88. I don't know where it's trading right now, but it went below. It went sub $1 trillion. So look, I'm trying to get out of the business of stock recommendations because the market is bigger than any individual, and I don't want people to lose money based on something I said. I'm more afraid of that than the reward of them making money on something I said. So I just tell people what I have. I own Amazon stock. I don't have any intention of selling it. It feels to me like it's not cheap, but it's insanely less expensive than it was. It's the number one e-commerce provider in the world. It has about 50% share of e-commerce. It's also the largest cloud company in the world. I believe that the most accretive action and what will likely happen in the next 2 to 3 years if the stock does not recover is that Andy Jassy will spin AWS, because AWS, in my view, is arguably one of the most valuable companies in the world trapped inside an e-commerce company that is maturing. AWS, an independent AWS, would be a stock that you buy little Rachel for her bat mitzvah, you'd put in your retirement account, no matter how expensive it was. You would buy AWS. It'd be one of those must-own stocks. So I think if the stock continues to underperform or goes down, I think they're going to spin AWS, and that would be wildly accretive to shareholders, because AWS, when unleashed from the confines of a streaming and an e-commerce company, is going to soar. It's going to soar like the boom overture. Thanks for the question, Mark. We have one quick break before our final question. Stay with us. Support for Prop G comes from Mint Mobile. If you're tired of your pricey phone bill, you could make room for it by cutting out frivolous expenses, your lattes, your gym membership, your favorite streaming service. But that sounds terrible. Another probably better option is switching to a more affordable provider, like Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That includes high-speed 5G data plus unlimited talk and text. And Mint Mobile has great rates whether you're buying for one or for a family. And their family plan starts at just 2 lines. You also don't need to get a new device. When you buy a new Mint Mobile plan, you can use your own phone and keep your phone number and contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/propg. That's mintmobile.com/propg. Cut your wireless bill up to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/propg. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Support for Prop G comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, including Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power the collaboration for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR, and legal, can stay connected and moving together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Welcome back. Question number three.
Hey, Scott. This is Mike in Dallas. After listening to your interview with Richard Rees, I've been giving more and more thought to having my high school son take a gap year between graduation and heading off to college. I do have concerns that institutes of higher learning will look at this gap year negatively, much like an employer would if there was a one-year gap in employment. So what advice would you give him to best use this time, whereas potential universities would look favorably upon this decision? Thank you.
Oh, hi, Mike from Dallas. Thanks for the thoughtful question. So in sum, Richard Rees points out that an 18-year-old male has a prefrontal cortex sort of equivalent to a 16 or 17-year-old girl. And that is, they just mature later. And the kind of gas break or executive functioning of a young man just isn't as developed as a young woman. And as a result, they oftentimes don't do as well in school. And can run into more emotional problems. I have personal experience with this. I showed up to UCLA when I was 17. This was back in sort of the space race. I was born in the mid-60s when my mom was super excited that I was so smart that I was sent to fifth grade for when I was in the third grade for English and math. And the idea was skip a grade and become like a Doogie Howser. And the reality is it's totally flipped. And that is now... In wealthy neighborhoods, people are holding their boys back and lying about their ages, because it ends up in research that the smallest boy in a class is much more likely to be depressed as an adult. He's more insecure. He has less confidence. He's more likely to be bullied. I mean, all that stuff, right? So I think redshirting for a year, as Richard Rees refers to it, is a really good idea. So what to do? Something. A job, something in national service. I wouldn't say traveling. I mean, maybe some traveling, have some fun, but have something. I mean, it's pretty obvious. It'll be impressive to the university. Volunteer work, getting a job, doing something, you know, exploring some sort of artistic endeavor. He's going to have to show something. He wants to be more eligible for school after those 12 months, which means he's going to need to show something for it. So I would encourage it, but I'd have a plan, and he needs to get on that plan right away because a year goes really, really fast. Also, there's some data. I think 92% of kids who are planning to go to college and take a gap year still go to college. And that's every parent's worst fear, is that if he doesn't stay on, if he doesn't keep tracking, he's not going to end up at college. That's not true. The majority of kids who are planning to go to college, the vast majority who are planning to go to college and take a gap year still end up going back to college. And two, colleges don't mind the gap year. And I know NYU doesn't, and I'm pretty sure most universities don't. We're fine. We're down with the gap year. We think it makes sense. I'd like to see national service that makes it easy for kids to do a gap year and bring some structure so they don't have to sit down with their parents and figure out how to be productive, but at the same time, enjoy myself, at the same time, find something attractive to admissions directors. I mean, that's a pretty difficult needle to thread. But in sum, a gap year, I think it's a great idea as long as he's on board with it. But yeah, I'm a big fan. Thanks for the question, Mike. That's all for this episode. Again, if you'd like to submit a question, please email a voice recording to officehours@profgmedia.com. Our producers are Caroline Chagrin and Drew Burrows. Sammy Resnick is our associate producer. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you next week.
This podcast was supported by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why we do the things we do. Listen to Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.